Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, January 10th, 2012, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Our guest this evening is well-known author John Michael Greer. We've recorded his interview with Lavendar since his schedule prevented him from appearing live to talk about his newest book entitled Apocalypse Not. In addition to being a prolific author, Mr. Greer is an independent scholar, historian of ideas, neo-Druid leader, hermeticist, environmentalist, and esotericist. In Apocalypse Not, he demonstrates how history has proven that apocalyptic and revolutionary notions such as the rapture and the singularity will never happen, but can be used to control the masses. His conversation with Lavendar will encompass some fascinating ideas and stories, so stay tuned. With the conclusion of the Teton meetings of Galactic Councils last Saturday, we'll be talking about that this evening, as well as the upcoming Sacred France Starseed Quest in May, hosted in collaboration with Kathleen McGowan, author of The Expected One, Philip Coppins, Catherine Brinkley, Lavendar, Ariel, and Sierra. Next week, on January 17th, Kathleen McGowan is coming back to Starseed Radio Academy, so don't miss that one. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening, and although our guest won't be here for questions, if you have a question for Lavendar, please call in on 917-889-8292 and then press 1 so we know you have a question. We've closed the chat room, so please use the call-in number for any questions. Don't forget to click follow on our show page and tell a friend about us. You may have missed this, but Starseed Radio Academy was a featured show last week here at Blog Talk Radio. So, go team! For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activations. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started in just a minute, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. I'm really excited about tonight's show, and although we don't have the chat room open, I hope that people will call in and want to discuss whatever they want to talk about after his interview. So why don't you go ahead and say hello to Sierra, and then we'll start the show.
Hello, Sierra.
Hello. It's so great to be here with everybody this evening, and I second that as with you, Lavendar. And go ahead and encourage people to go ahead and call in so you can get your questions answered, and let's get started.
Okay. This is Lavendar's interview with John Michael Greer.
So tonight's show is going to be very, very exciting. We have John Michael Greer, who's written a book called Apocalypse Not, Everything You Know About 2012, Nostradamus, and The Rapture Is Wrong. Well, I got to say, John, that the title of this absolutely will grab people, and they will pick up this book. So welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
And I just have been reading the book today and noticing that you have researched and really gone to the ends of the earth to find a lot of this information. But if you would, just give us a little background on why you decided to write this book.
Well, partly it's because, you know, we have the big, it's 2012 now, and there are a lot of people who are getting very, very worked up about the idea that the Mayan calendar is coming to an end December 21st of this year. And, of course, there are also a lot of people who are worked up about the rapture. We had the Herald Campings to rapture things last year. And a lot of people are generally getting worked up about a lot of things having to do with the idea that history is about to come to a screeching halt and be replaced with something else that echoes either our fondest dreams, our fondest nightmares, or some mixture of the two. I had some uncertainties about the Mayan calendar because I'd actually studied a little bit about that when I was in college. And what was being said on the media, what was being said in the 2012 literature, and what I'd studied back in college about the Mayan calendar did not match up at all. So I went back to the sources. I read the Book of Chilambalam, which is one of the old Mayan calendar sources, and got up to date on the current state of the art in, you know, among the archaeologists and so on who are studying the Mayan calendar, studying Mayan culture generally. And, well, it became very, very quickly clear that there was something going on here that was really rather weird. Because what the people, the 2012 writers and the media and sort of the general scuttlebutt going on in society was saying about 2012 had nothing to do with the ancient Mayans. And that's when I decided, okay, there's probably a book in this. And, well, the rest of it kind of followed from there.
Yes, well, I know that you have done quite a bit of research back to see when all this kind of started with prophecies mm-hmm. being predicted, and of course a mm-hmm. lot of them didn't come to fruition. Let me ask you about, there's a term called Mimi. How do you pronounce it?
It's a meme.
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 Meme. What is a meme, and kind of give us the background on how you started tracking the meme.
Okay. Basically, Richard Dawkins, who is a biologist and also these days, of course, a very well-known atheist, came up with the idea of the meme back, in the 1970s was when he wrote the book on the subject. And the idea is that some ideas spread through society the way that genes spread through a population by, you know, in sort of a Darwinian evolutionary sense. You get a certain idea that gets into circulation, and people pick it up, and it spreads, and it can kind of maintain its own existence the way that genetic material will do so. And there are some people who insist that all human culture is made up of collections of memes. There are other people who challenge that. But there are certainly some ideas that work that way, that work to shift metaphors a little bit, kind of like a virus, like a cold virus, okay? You know, you get the cold, you pass it on to somebody else, they pass it on to someone else, pretty soon everybody's sniffling. There are ideas that basically cause everyone to sniffle, and one of the classic ones I came to see is the meme of the apocalypse, the idea that, again, history as we know it is about to come to an end really, really soon now, either at a date that's specified or, well, we don't know exactly when, but any minute, and it's going to be replaced by something that fits our preferences a little better. And so you get this meme in all kinds of different forms, in all kinds of different human cultures. And if you look back over history and trace it, you can watch it spread from culture to culture, from group to group, from religion to religion, until, you know, we get to the situation we're in now, where every other person practically is convinced that the world is about to come to an end.
Okay. Well, I do track genealogy somewhat, and the cells and the DNA information, mm-hmm. so... I'm really with you on what you're saying, and I'm sure that depending on the DNA activation of the person and the mm-hmm. bloodlines, and of course when the bloodlines mix and get crossways, there's no telling what kind of meme gets let loose.
Yeah, exactly.
But especially if it has fear attached to it.
Mm-hmm. This is all full of fear, of course. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. The fear vibration, it gets so strong that it raises its ugly head, and of course it becomes war after a while, and people are killing over it, and destruction comes, and then history starts repeating itself through war after war after war. So yes, I see where you're going with this. Tell us a little bit more about your research with the Mayan calendar.
Okay, well, basically the thing to start with in understanding the Mayan calendar is that it doesn't end. It's a circle. Like all the ancient calendars were circles, actually. We have this idea that really came into the modern world with Orthodox Christianity, the sort of mainstream Christian idea that the world was created at X point, it will go on in a straight line, and then it will stop. That was a new idea when it came out, and I don't know that it's a particularly good one. All of the older calendars, whether the Mayan calendar, the Egyptian calendar, you name it, they were circles. And what happens at the end of any of the greater or lesser cycles is kind of what happens when the odometer in your car rolls over. It's an important thing, everyone watches the odometer to see it all turn to zero, but it's not the end of anything. And so the Mayan calendar is particularly complex in that it has a whole bunch of different cycles that are all turning at once, and they turn at different rates. There are cycles that go, there's a 9-day cycle, and a 13-day cycle, and a 20-day cycle, and a 52-year cycle, and various other cycles going up to literally millions and millions of years. And one of the ways that we know the Mayan calendar doesn't come to an end is that the Mayans liked to reference important astrological dates that would happen at the same cycle date. You know, you get a particular day, like December 21st, 2012, is for Ahau, 3 Kankin. That's its position in 4 of the cycles, actually. And that particular day happens once every 52 years. And so there will be, you'll come across an old Mayan inscription where something else happened at a 4 Ahau 3 Kankin day. And they'll reference forward saying, and at such and such point in the future or at such and such point in the past, this very important astrological alignment or this very important lining up of the cycles will happen on that same day, and that same vibration is influencing this event that we're commemorating with this carving or this stela or what have you. So when you go, you look through some of these things, there are literally dates being referenced that are 4 million years in our future or 3-4 million years in the past. They covered a lot of time in their cycles. And if they're referencing dates 4 million years in the future, fairly clearly, time is not about to stop.
Okay. Can you give us a little history about some of the myths about the Mayans, like they just appeared and then they just disappeared or something?
Yeah.
Can you give us a little history about that?
Sure. Well, the thing is, a lot of the problem was that until people figured out how to read the Mayan hieroglyphs, the Mayans were basically a blank. The archaeologists in the late 19th century, starting to explore in southern Mexico and Guatemala, some of these places, found these lost cities buried in the jungle, and everyone's going, what? Because nobody had any idea they were there. Of course, they could have asked the local natives who could have told them, but archaeologists didn't do that in those days. So there were these mysterious cities with these mysterious hieroglyphic carvings that nobody could read. And the first major archaeological projects with the early 20th century archaeology got the idea that all of a sudden these cities had popped out of nowhere. And then they were abandoned fairly suddenly. And that was simply the best they could do with the knowledge at the time. Unfortunately, that got into circulation in popular culture. And you'll still find that being cited in popular culture. Now, in fact, starting in the 1970s, when the next really great wave of archaeological research into the Mayans came, and it became clear that nothing of the sort had happened, that the Mayans emerged out of a long series of previous cultures, that they borrowed many of their ideas from older Mesoamerican native cultures, that there were still Mayans, there's still Mayans there today, in fact. And there were Mayan city-states on the classic style, on a small scale, in various corners of the Yucatan up until the Spanish conquest. So it was actually a very continuous thing. But this idea that the Mayans had suddenly popped into being with this amazing culture and then vanished in a puff of smoke, again, it had gotten, based on these misunderstandings from the 1920s and the 1930s, that had gotten stuck in popular culture. And once you get something stuck in popular culture, you can't get it out with dynamite.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a gentleman, I didn't mark his name down. There was a guy that you quoted by something about the way he thought, and it's, gosh, it's, I should have made note of it. Anyway, the way that he projected his ideas about everything, everybody bought into it, and then one day people said, you know what, maybe we don't need to think the way he thinks anymore.
Eric Thompson.
That's the one. That's
Eric Thompson, Dr. Eric Thompson. Sir Eric Thompson. Yeah. You get this. The guy was brilliant, no question. He was an absolutely brilliant man. He was a superb scholar of Mayan, and he basically brought the study of the Mayan civilization to a screeching halt for 40 years because he was very brilliant and dead wrong. And, you know, and it happened. This is something that happens. He was himself he was English. He was one of these very, very conservative, high church Anglican types, Tory. And he had kind of ended up projecting onto the Mayans all his fantasies of what life would be like if people were all, Tories and high church Anglicans and things like that, and everything was very ceremonious and very, very mystical and very, and, you know. Which is all very well and good, and of course there was a lot of mystical material going on in Mayan culture. There was a lot of very deep, meaningful, profound spiritual traditions, but they weren't Anglican. I promise you that.
We know that, yeah.
The thing is, he also had one of the ways in which he brought Mayan studies to a screeching halt was that he had this completely wrong idea about how the hieroglyphic writing worked. And while he was busy, insisting that this was the way it was, and so all research had to go through these channels, and anyone who didn't, well, they just didn't get published because, you know the way science works these days. A couple of researchers who are really prestigious and have a lot of influence over a given field. If you disagree with them, you don't get you don't get published, you don't get tenure, so everyone just kind of follows along. And so everyone who was researching the Mayan language and the Mayan writings was basically stuck in the mud. Well, over in the Soviet Union, which was the one part of the world where you could get away with it, because Thompson's influence did not extend to Moscow. They Yuri Knorosov and a bunch of other Russian scholars got to work on it and actually broke the thing and figured out ignored Thompson, went the other direction and said, oh, we can read this. And so after Thompson died, it's usually the way it goes. I mean, science advances by heart attacks like so many other human phenomena. And after Thompson finally died, all this stuff got into print in the West and everyone went, wow, okay, so we can actually read this stuff.
Yeah.
And then Thompson's whole legacy kind of got quietly brushed aside, and everyone actually started learning something about the Mayans for a change.
Wow! Yeah. Well, and that's the mime, the meme.
The meme. Yeah.
The meme was at work.
Very much so.
Yeah, very much so. I'd like to switch a little bit to Terence McKenna and what you said about him in your book and how he came to jump on the Mayan bandwagon.
Well, I don't know so much jumped on as almost invent. He was at the beginning of
the current
2012
yeah.
business. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, Terry McKenna was a really interesting cat, no question. He was one of the major players in the 60s psychedelic revival. And where a lot of people were doing, I mean, you had people like Timothy Leary and so on, Richard Alpert, who were using LSD and things like that. McKenna was not willing to settle for anything so tame. This is a guy who went down the Amazon in a raft in order to meet with the various shamans on the way and try out their strange psychedelic drugs. And that's the kind of thing he is. So he was taking like ayahuasca and mixing it with magic mushrooms and going on these bizarre drug trips. I'm sure some of our listeners who belong to a certain generation will probably have stories of their own, you know, about the, you know, fanged peanut brittle and tap dancing spiders and so on. But Terence McKenna, he spent a lot of time coming up with, you know, having these remarkably colorful experiences and writing books about them. But at one point in one of these particular drug trips, he had this idea that time was actually speeding up. And in fact, time was going to speed up until it reached an infinite speed at some point in the not-too-distant future, and at that point, time would literally, when it reached infinite speed, it would stop. That was the end of time. History was over. Again, those of our listeners who belong to a certain generation probably had experiences like that under certain chemical conditions, but very few of them took it seriously. Terence McKenna took his at least somewhat seriously, and he did this complex series of calculations based on the Yi Ching, the Chinese Book of Changes, and a variety of other things, and came up with a date for time to stop, which was going to be in sometime in late 2012. And then somebody mentioned to him that the Mayan calendar had this big rollover in 2012, and so he went and adjusted his figures so it would come out right for December 21st, 2012. Now, he himself was never sure how seriously to take this, which I think shows a certain amount of common sense. But this the time wave zero theory, he called it, was part of his sort of running rap that he did when he was doing public presentations and talks, and it was very colorful. But that was the condition it was in when it came, when it got to the next person in the story, who we can get to in a little bit, who was, of course, the late Jose Arguelles.
Well, the thing that I remembered this morning when I read it jumped right off the page when you were talking about McKenna was that his first date that he gave for 2012 was November 17th, 2012. This is a date that a lot of us that listen to this radio broadcast refers to as Pleiadian lineup. It is a date that where the Pleiades rises and sets with the sun. There's a whole lot of information on our website about Pleiadian lineup. So when I saw the date, November 17th, 2012, that's what he first came up with. And then later on he changed it because I guess other people convinced him that time wave zero was their date. But what's interesting about December 20th is that it is the mark of galactic center in astrology. That's 26 Sagittarius, which we call the mark of galactic center, which has to do with some of the tracking, some of the things that we've been involved in on Starseed Hotline about tracking astrological happenings and bloodlines and ET experiments on the planet. So I just thought that was very, very interesting. Now, I met Jose Arguelles. Yes, I met him and spent some time with him on, I believe, two or three different occasions in my life. And I met him before the August Harmonic Convergence. And he did have a strong impact on some of the decisions that I made during that time. And I saw the correlation astrologically. Now, what was interesting about his dates of 16th and 17th is that it did not match what I was tracking. And I was tracking something called the Grand Fire in the Grand Trine Fire in three planets that would make a perfect pyramid, and it was going to happen on August 20th and not the 16th and 17th.
Not the 16th. Yeah,
so
okay.
So what I said to a lot of people through the years was, well, that was the PR date. Everybody ran out with their crystals and did their ends, and then they went back to work. And then when the real jolt of energy hit the planet, you know, that's when it happened. It was when everybody wasn't looking.
Well, you know, I think it would be very funny if Time Wave Zero were actually to hit on the date in November, the date when the sun and the Pleiades are aligned. You know,
yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Just take everyone by surprise.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a month early. You know, how about that? So, but I think that all the people that I have talked to through the years and have been tracking through the years, they all had a place in history with me about their prophecies, and I've just been of course, all my life studying different things about Nostradamus and and just trying to keep up with what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so amazing to me is that you just have to whatever is working at the time, what the belief systems. I really saw where belief systems, and now that you told me it was a meme, that I'm tracking it from that point of view now, because it's in bloodlines and it's in religions and schools, and people just they plant it in there, and it may not be true, and it just grows and grows and grows, and then one day you wake up and go, what? None of this is true. Absolutely none of it. And you probably don't know much about me, but I've had a lot of UFO contact in my life, ET training and so forth, and one of the things that happened to me is when I said, well, I want to see the truth of religion on the planet, and my being said, there isn't any on your planet. And I just kind of froze, and I said, well, what am I to do? And they said, you have to give up everything you know to be true for what we're about to show you. And that was the start of me throwing the baby out with the bathwater and starting all over about religion, spirituality, and a lot of things. And through my discovery and through all my adventures, and I wrote them down and put them in the vault, and I'm slowly bringing those discoveries out one at a time. That's what I have found, is that through the history of the planet, whoever was in power and whoever wanted their thought to be written down and thrown into the people, that's the way it was. And it had nothing to do with truth. It had to do with what they wanted.
Yeah, as Henry Ford very famously commented, history is the bunk commonly believed.
Yeah.
And, you know the... It's a complicated situation. One of the things that makes a lot of sense to me when looking at some of these prophecies, looking at a lot of the, and a lot of religious teachings also, is that if you take them literally, they're idiotic. They don't work. You know, you can sit here waiting for the rapture or what have you, or what have you. But if you realize, hold it, what is this trying to tell me? If this were a dream, how would I interpret it? If you realize that these things can be symbolically meaningful, then it becomes a lot more interesting. And one of the teachings that's been in circulation in various mystery schools for a long time now is simply that there's the popular religion, which is appropriate to people at one level of development. Then there's how you would interpret that religion at another level of development, and there are other levels still. So there isn't, you know... You can't tell a truth to somebody who isn't capable of hearing it. You know, you can't sit a 6-year-old down and explain to them what love and marriage are about. They're not going to get it. So you know there's a development that has to take place.
Well,
and
there's levels of consciousness. I have them categorized. I'm always saying, you know, if you're dealing with a 1, 2, or 3, you can't tell them about a 5.
Yeah, exactly. It's to tell somebody a truth they're not capable of absorbing is in effect a lie to them. And so a lot of the old mystery traditions, a lot of the esoteric traditions, you have to get used to the fact that you're going to be spending most of your life talking to people who simply can't get it.
Right.
And I think a lot of religions have done, and a lot of those you know, because there have been a lot, there's a lot of corruption in the world of religions, but there's also there have been a lot of very powerful and wise spiritual teachers, and I admire the efforts that a lot of them have taken to say, okay, how can I communicate something to people who, you know, are at this at fairly basic level of consciousness, and I think some of them have done a very good job.
Yeah, I agree. I was just commenting this morning to someone about when Christopher Columbus came over with the 3 ships and the Indians came out, they couldn't see the ships on the water because they weren't trained to see anything out there. So therefore, their eyes didn't see it. I always thought
it was so incomprehensible to them that they couldn't process.
No.
What? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. they couldn't process what they were actually seeing, and it made me think of the other story, kind of off the subject, but I always think about it. A woman walks in and sees her husband in bed with another woman and says, "Are you going to believe your lying eyes or what I tell you?"
Yes.
So it has, you know, it's like how a person takes information, processes it, and what their consciousness has developed to, which maybe has to do with genealogy, bloodlines, the evolving soul. I do believe that souls evolve into mastery at different levels. And so I really do think that we're all here doing different dances at different degrees, at different levels of consciousness. And the whole thing about, well, you've got to believe like I believe, or, you know, whenever that started, it's part of what keeps the wars going on.
Yeah, very, very much so. Because it's all about fear. You were talking about the vibration of fear earlier. People who are afraid, and especially people who are afraid that they're not right, are going to go out of their way to push their beliefs on other people, because if you believe it too, then that means I'm right.
Yeah.
Okay. Dubious reasoning, yeah.
Yeah, right and wrong really has a place, you know, where the polarity dance takes over. And what I've been telling a lot of my clients lately is, get yourself out of polarity. Try not to get into arguments or anything with anyone and stay in polarity. If you can stay the observer and work and do your work from an observation point and stay steady and stay into your alignment and try not to get into too many fusses, then you will, your consciousness raises up to where you can make wiser decisions. And that's what it's all about right now is, you know, who do you want to be with, and where do you want to live, and how do you want to spend your time and energy and make those wise decisions about how much joy you're going to have in your life. And so one of the things that I tell them is, please, you know, don't get in polarity with so many people or ideas, religions, or concepts that keeps you so busy away from the joy of your life right now. And that's kind of how I talk to my clients about what's coming. Now, I do talk to them about 2012. I do look at their charts. I do say there are certain things that I see in people's charts that do align to a 2012. There's no doubt about it. But it's not about the end. I never talk about the end of the world. The only thing I talk about is, oh, there's going to be some kind of moment of enlightenment, or something's going to change. I don't know what it is exactly. It could be a combination. It could be. It could be like you take your thumb and go down the scale of a piano. You know, it could just be that. Who knows? Or you know, something.
Every so often, I wonder if the big moment of enlightenment in 2012 is going to happen on the 22nd of December, when this, you know, there hasn't been an end of the world and the world is continuing, and then people suddenly look up and say, you know, okay, I guess we actually have to deal with things. We actually have to fix things. Nobody else is going to bail us out of the problems we're making for ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe that's going to be the great moment. I'd be cheering.
I think it's called all the above. It's kind of like when I view it from when I really step out and view it with my galactic eyes. It's like, okay, here's all these experiments going simultaneously. They've all agreed that there's going to be not so much an end to the experiment as there's going to be, you know, a change, a shift of energies. Like if you went to work at 9, you got off at 3, okay? At 3 o'clock, the shift changes.
There's definitely a change.
It's just like, okay, on December 20th or 22nd, maybe it's November 17th of 2020.
Maybe it's November 17th.
Whatever it is, it'll be just like a light bulb goes on to some, and others, and I don't think others will feel anything. I think it's probably designed for a whole evolutionary jump of bloodlines and people on the planet. That's just my personal belief, because I've been tracking this for so long. And it'll be so subtle that they wake up with an idea and they think it's their own. And maybe it's a whole group that thinks the same thing. It's like that 100 monkey theory. You know that, right? When,
oh, yeah. I remember that, like, when it first came out.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I kind of think that might be what will be happening in this 2012. Mm-hmm. And it may start, it may have already started. It may happen all year. You know, you wake up with new moon, full moon activations, different dates for different times. You know, I've pinpointed these 25, 26, 27 degree times every month. It could be just a crank on the clock that just, maybe it's so subtle that no one, and you're right, responsibility and saying, you know what, we're the creators of this, and we can keep creating and solving a lot of the problems on the planet. I tell you, one of the things that bothers me the most about the United States is that how many children go hungry, and how many people that there were not taken care of right in our own country. You know, once the homeless vets and the people coming back from the wars, and it's like, why aren't we taking care of our own before we go try to take care of someone else?
Yeah, we have a lot of problems here at home to fix. I think I definitely agree we should concentrate on fixing them before we try to tell the rest of the world what to do.
That's right. That's right. You know, and why go into tribes and Indian tribes and save them from what? From nature?
Yeah.
Yeah, save them from nature. That's good.
Like that. Save them from nature.
Yeah, save them from nature. Don't they know about global warming or whatever? I don't know. But, it's like tend to our own business, whatever our own business is, instead of someone
else. We have a lot of business to tend to. One of the things that I wrote about in the book is very much the way that the apocalypse meme, people end up using it as an excuse to not take care of their business, not take care of their own problems, but assume that someone else is going to bail them out. It's like there's the joke about the guy who's caught in a flood, and you know the water's rising. It's reached the base of his house, and this guy comes by in a 4x4 and says, "Hi, you want to jump on board? We can take you to dry land." He goes, "No, the Lord will provide." So the guy shrugs, drives on. The water keeps rising. A boat comes by. "Hey, come on, we can get you out of here, get you to dry land." "No, says the homeowner, "the Lord will provide." The boat goes off. Finally, the water's so high, he's on the roof of his house. A helicopter comes by. The guy says, "Hey, we can lower a ladder to you and get you to dry ground." And the guy on the roof says, no, "the Lord will provide." So, of course, the water finishes rising. He's swept away and drowns. So he goes to heaven. And there he is, you know, he gets through the pearly gates because he's otherwise a decent guy. And he says, I want to talk to God. I'm really kind of baffled about this. And he goes up to the throne of God and, you know, he says, "Hey, what was this? You were supposed to, like, provide and save me and this kind of stuff." And God just kind of sighs and shakes his head and says, "I sent the four-wheeler. I sent the boat. I sent the helicopter."
Yeah. Right.
You know, so many people wait for a miracle to solve their problems when those problems could be solved by a little hard work and a little forbearance and a little self-discipline. And the apocalypse meme is a very popular way of convincing ourselves that we don't have to take care of our problems because, you know, the rapture is going to happen, or the 2012 is going to happen, or the world is going to be blown up by a giant comet or what have you.
Well, it's all focused on something better than what you have right now.
Yeah.
It's all focused. And it's like, we can make things better, and we don't have to wait for 2012 or an apocalypse to tell us. And I'm telling our Starseed family that all the time, and they're coming more out of belief systems, and they're going into what we call knowing systems. You know, the belief system, you know, that's part of the meme you're talking about. It's like busting that and going, you know what? That didn't work for my ancestors. Why would it work for me?
Yeah, exactly. You know, been there, done that, used the T-shirt to mop up the mess. Let's not go back.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And what do you think about the the group over in California, that the Heaven's Gate group, can you give us a little insight on what you think happened there?
That's an incredibly sad story. Marshall Heppelwhite, the guy who ran that group, he'd been around in one end of the contactee scene for many, many years, since the 70s at least. Actually, maybe even before then. I know Jacques Vallée, the UFO writer, one of
right.
Jacques Vallée's books talks about him, and he was just this sort of continuing story going on in the contactee scene. He would announce that, you know, the spaceships were going to land at such and such a date, and people were supposed to come with him and do these complicated ascetic practices and all this kind of stuff, and they'd be taken off the planet, and it wouldn't happen. And then a couple of years later, he'd be back doing the same thing over and over and over again. He ended up with this hardcore of followers who were, you know, very much into his belief system, even though it didn't work, even though it didn't happen. And so apparently, finally, many of these were very bright people, but, you know, the rational mind is one of those things. It's the old computer phrase, garbage in, garbage out. If your beliefs are based on nonsense, you may not be able to reason your way out of them. That requires a change in consciousness, not just reasonable thinking. But so they apparently just got to the point that they decided they were going to make sure that this time they were actually going to leave the planet. Unfortunately, they chose to do it by taking poison, and that was the end.
Yeah, did they have a rude awakening when they stepped out of body and said, "Oops, this is not
yeah,
the
no
way
space,
it works."
No spaceship waiting for you guys.
No.
This kind of thing happens every so often. I think of the Solar Temple that did the same thing a few years before then, who were insisting, you know, the world is about to be totally destroyed and we need to leave our physical bodies behind and da 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 da. So they did. You know, great lot of good it did them or anyone else. And you get this kind of thing. People will get stuck on the idea that, you know, that they refuse to deal, you know, they refuse to learn the lesson that this life is trying to teach them, and go, in effect, storming off in a huff. And I don't think it doesn't do them any good. It doesn't do anyone else any good, and it just leaves another pile of bodies somewhere.
Right. I noticed that you did quite a bit of research on Nostradamus. Is there anything mm-hmm. that you can tell us that you have discovered from his quatrains that gives him believability?
Well, Nostradamus is a tricky one because there's layers upon layers upon layers of stuff woven into the quatrains. There's also the rather awkward fact that there's a lot of fake quatrains in circulation. That's been true for a very long time. During the Second World War, for example, both the Allies and the Nazis manufactured fake Nostradamus quatrains to back their own propaganda.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, seriously, that's been going on for a long time. But if you get the authentic quatrains, they are very tricky to interpret, and very often the literal interpretation clearly is not what's going on here. I'm thinking of the one that goes, I think this should be pretty close to it. It's 1999, seventh month, the great king of terror descends from the heavens to resuscitate the king of Angoulême before and after Mars reigns at his will. I think that's the translation. And I remember in the summer, in the late spring and early summer of 1999, those people who weren't freaking out over Y2K, we're going, is it going to be a giant comet? What is this great king of terror that's going to descend from the heavens in the seventh month of 1999? And nothing happened. So the literal interpretation of that Nostradamus quatrain obviously didn't happen. But so the question is, what's going on there? Nostradamus was very deeply involved in, of course, astrology, as I'm sure you know, and in a lot of other very deep esoteric traditions. And I think my own guess is probably what's in those quatrains has not yet really thoroughly been deciphered. That there may be, there are depths within depths. A lot of the older, you know, the medieval Renaissance esoteric writings, there's depths within depths, layers within layers, and you don't necessarily figure it out at the first glance or even the first 100 glances.
Well, that's kind of what the Da Vinci Code was about, is about layer upon layer upon layer, and even Kathleen McGowan's books that she's written. is about people deciding to put codes in paintings and music
mm-hmm.
and statues
mm-hmm.
in different
mm-hmm.
places that wouldn't be deciphered for generations.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an example. A couple of years ago, I worked with Christopher Warnock, who's a traditional astrologer, one of the people who works with the old Renaissance and medieval astrology, translating an old Latin manuscript of astrological magical stuff. It's one of the things I'm interested in. And it's a very strange document. It's called the Picatrix. Nobody knows why or what the name means, but it was written in the 9th century. And it was a very, very famous book for some centuries thereafter. It had never been translated in English. But one of the things, there's a lot of really bizarre stuff in it, but one of the things the book says toward the beginning is, this book is about more than one thing. And the thing, the obvious simple stuff on the surface, yes, you can do that, but this book is not meant for everybody. This book is meant for the wise. And if you study it closely enough and carefully enough, you'll figure out what it's actually teaching.
What's the name of that book? I want to write this down.
Yeah, this is the Picatrix. P-I-C-A-T-R-I-X.
I-X.
Yes, Picatrix. And it's the, I think it's on Amazon these days. But I know you can get it at www.renaissanceastrology.com because
okay.
that's Chris Warnock's site, and it's a very strange book, and some of the things in it, at first glance, if you take them literally, it's just horrible stuff. But again, the book's saying this is for the wise, and I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of stuff that's basically encoded into it. And I've been studying.
Yeah. I got to see this. This would be right up my alley of tracking.
Well, there you go. I hope you enjoy it. It was an amazing experience to translate. The original version was written in Arabic, as I said, in the 9th century, and then it was translated into Latin in the 13th century. And it was the Latin translation that I work with, because I read Latin. I don't have a clue about Arabic. But and it's saying in so many words, don't assume the literal meaning.
Are you working on any other books besides this one?
Constantly.
Constant. So you've got another book maybe in the works?
Yes. Basically, I'm always writing. I write for a living. Apocalypse Knot was, I think, my 26th book.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've written on a range of Western esoteric traditions. I've written this particularly on the Druid tradition, which is the tradition which I'm mostly active these days. I have books on peak oil and the future industrial society, and just a range of stuff.
Oh, well, let's have your website. What is your website?
Oh, I don't actually have a personal website.
Oh.
I probably No, the Druid Order that I had, I was actually in 2003 elected the head of one of the Druid Orders here in America, is www.aoda.org. That's for Ancient Order of Druids in America.
Okay. But
and anything else?
People can go on Amazon and find Apocalypse Knot, and then also the rest of your books will be listed there.
Yeah.
Is that right?
You can just click on my name, and it will get you all my books.
Okay, John Michael Greer. I have enjoyed this so much today. I'm so sorry that you're not going to be able to be on our show for the question from the switchboard to you. So I'm sorry that that won't be available for them to be able to speak to you. But I have really enjoyed so much being able to talk to you today, and you give me a clarity about so many things. When I read this book, it's like, that makes sense, and that makes sense. Everything that you wrote in this book makes a lot of sense. But I got to tell you, that date, November 17, 2012, that McKenna came up with just jumped right off the page at me, because I said, ooh, that's the date we've all been tracking for so long.
I'll mark it on the calendar.
Yeah, we mark it on the calendar. There's twice a year that we look at Pleiadian lineup, and that's May 17th, 18th and 19th, and November 17th, 18th and 19th of every year. And it's something that we've been tracking for so long. So, you know, maybe at a later date when you can join us on a Tuesday, we would love to have you back and talking about maybe some of the newer things that you're discovering and share them with our audience.
That would be great.
But, so thank you so much for being on our show, John Michael Greer, and back to you, Ariel.
Well, thank you so much, Levendar and John Michael Greer. Levendar, I know you're there.
Yes, I'm here.
We have some people with questions, and I think that Eileen is here. And we also have the Teton meetings to talk about, as well as the Sacred France Starseed Quest. So,
why don't we talk to Eileen?
Okay. I'm guessing this is her because of the 415 area code.
Yes. Can
Hello,
you hear
Eileen?
Me?
Eileen, is this you?
Yes, this is Eileen Dunay. How are you, ladies?
Hello. We're good.
Good. What a fabulous interview and a wealth of information John Michael Greer is.
Absolutely.
Well, you're the one that brought him to our attention. And why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do.
You have
been responsible for bringing several of our guests on, so why don't you just talk about what you do?
Well, what I do for a living and right now is I work as a book publicist, and I'm working for a fabulous company out of Berkeley, California called Viva Editions, and they're the publishers of Apocalypse Not and many other books. And I also work with Granite Publishing, and they do a lot of exopolitical ET contactee books. And, you've even had James Olson on as well, The Whole Brain Path to Peace. He's another client of mine. So what I do is I work with authors in helping them get their message out. It's like a global or cosmic liaison, so to speak.
Well, you also brought us that wonderful lady from Australia, Human by Day and Zeta by Night.
Yes,
Carol.
Yeah, that's from Granite Publishing, the Zeta books. They are pretty darn amazing. Their story is really engaging for me. After all the books that I've worked on with abductees, contactees, they seem to have synthesized the spiritual message better than almost any that I've ever read. And I think that particularly for my interests, which are rather esoteric and cosmic anyway, it really just, I was thrilled to be able to work with Judy Carroll and the co-author who you didn't get to talk to, but hopefully she'll start doing interviews, and her name is Helene Kay. And they're very interesting ladies, very interesting.
You know, it's just kind of amazing to me how that once we started interviewing people from Australia, more Australians are contacting us. It's like somebody just really lit the light over in Australia. I can't tell you how many new people have come from Australia. So that's kind of exciting. In fact, we have one lady that's going to start a website that's called Starseed Down Under.
Oh, I like that. Well, maybe she'll have Judy and Helene on. It's interesting. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jim Sparks. He had a book that came out in, like, let's see, probably 2006 and 2007 called The Keepers that I worked on. And he ended up doing world tour and spent a lot of time in Australia. You've got that, they've got a marvelous magazine down there, Nexus. And they've got a pretty good ET UFO community down there.
It's great. We have a lot of people that listen to our show that are writers, and they're putting together their books. So why don't you give them information about how to find you?
Oh, well, you can find me the old-fashioned way online. my email is eduhne@comcast.net. Or you can find me at Granite Publishing Group. They, let's see, I could give an email. I hadn't even thought about that. I could get that information and then pass it on to you before we finish talking from Granite, because we have a space there that has the information online. I don't actually have a website because I prefer to encourage the authors that I work with to get really viral themselves. You can actually reach me via Facebook, Eileen Dunay, and that's Duhne, and you know, we can talk about publishing needs. It's a it's an amazing open field now.
You've had some amazing things happen to you in your life on your metaphysical journey. Is there anything you'd like to share with us that has happened to you that was, say, an eye-opener?
Oh, my goodness, an eye-opener. Wow, that's a question that I was not totally prepared for, but what comes
okay.
to my mind is the most exciting thing for me was finding a series of books by Alice Bailey that allowed me to synthesize all the information that I had received in different spiritual practices, from born again to Orthodox Islam to Taoism to the universe to whatever, and then I in Buddhism, and so then I started reading the Alice Bailey materials, ancient wisdom, based on, you know, the Theosophical Society, which Helena Blavatsky and others started in the around 1875, and that line of thinking and Alice Bailey's material allowed me to synthesize all these different various bits of information and thoughts, and gave me a large enough canvas where different things fit in. And so when I found that information, it allowed me to work even better in the fields like we're talking about, the starseed and the UFO, because I understood that our planet is one of experiments and lots of things are going on here. And if you look at it cosmically, like the Pleiadians or the Sirians and, excuse me, that this is all talked about in the esoteric astrology and influences, energetic influences coming into our planet. So then all of a sudden in 1996 when UFO-oriented books started coming my way, I was able to begin to really understand it. And now, you know, 16 years later, I can say, yeah, it all makes sense to me, and it's wonderful that it's coming out now in 2012 even more than it has been.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm so glad that you called in tonight and to be part of our show. So you stay contacted with our website and with us, because we want to know more about the authors that come your way. Okay.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for the interviews that you've done. Everybody who's talked with you enjoys being on the Starseed Radio program. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Eileen.
All right.
Thanks, Eileen.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Lavendar, I would like to, for those listeners who maybe are newer and haven't heard about what the Teton meetings are, can you just, in a nutshell, explain what the Teton meetings are and why they are important, not only to Starseed, but to the entire planet?
Well, these meetings have been going on for a very, very long time. And inside of the Grand Teton in Wyoming is a gigantic room, a place where beings come and conduct meetings that happen on January 1 through 7 and July 1 through 7. And how it affects the population is that the bloodlines and the experiments that are on the planet, mostly starseed, they will contact the soul, and the soul will be able to go to these meetings. And there are 144,000 that show up every 45 minutes for 7 days and nights. And in that period of time, beings will go into alignment for what they'll be doing in the next 6 months. This is a six-month orientation, although that we're given longer plans, things that people have agreed to do on a long-range plan. But mostly it is to help people to adjust to the alignment of their lives and to keep the experiments going on the planet in the way of evolution. So during these periods, a lot of people will wake up the next morning and say, I don't remember a thing. But then, 2 or 3 days later, they start making changes in their life. Sometimes, depending on who the person is and how long they've been going to the meetings, they will allow that person to remember. And if they don't remember, they can look down maybe at their thumbs and see the markings on top of their thumbs, and that'll be like little shot marks. And those are called shots of non-remembrance. So a lot of activity happens from there. And just recently, I came in contact with a wonderful woman up at the Tetons who is a forest ranger, and she's had the duty of guarding the Grand Teton. And so she has invited me to come see her, and I'm very excited about this new contact, because I do plan on going back to the Tetons at some point in time. I have not been back since 1986,
physically,
where I actually was invited inside the mountain, of which I came out and wrote about that later. But basically, it's a time when you simply get your alignment so that you can go forward with your life. It could be on a mundane level, it could be on a spiritual level, it could be on a galactic level. It depends on your consciousness and who you are. So basically that's what happens. Now at this last meeting, which just ended on Saturday, one of the things that was brought to our attention is that a lot of bloodlines that used to be on the planet are being erased. There's some that have crossed over into extreme war behavior, and you know, it's like there's nothing they can do with the bloodline, because it just, every time it comes out, it just wants to go to war. So there are some bloodlines that have been, you know, it's kind of like you take a magnet over something and just kind of demagnetize it. Well, that's some of the things that have happened to some of the bloodlines on the planet. Also, we were told about more walk-ins and what the duties of walk-ins are on the planet, and how that some of those walk-ins are now going to be in positions of power on the planet, and the changes that we're looking toward as far as freedom and the change of the guard. There's a lot of change of the guard that's about to take place. So those are just some of the things that took place at the Tetons this past week.
Well, and this is good news. I would like to just interject for clarification that of the 144 souls that go every 45 minutes, and I have to sit down and do the math on that one, it is your soul essence. Your body stays in your bed.
Right.
And they come and take your life force. They go, you have your download, and then they bring you back. Some people actually are physically transported, you know, physical body and all.
Right.
But for the most part, they just get the real you on the inside. And because I've had a lot of people, well, not a lot, but several people have emailed me and said, like, you know, I want to have conscious memory of what goes on in there. And I have to caution people about you have to think about your 3D life and how is it going to rock your boat. And once you know, you can't unknow. So if you don't remember having been there, don't worry about it.
In fact, it's best not to remember. It really is.
Well, you just have to know that choices that changes that you might make afterwards will happen, whether you remember or not. right. You know, the evolution will happen. It's on time. So, and I'm sure that the next one in July will really be significant, being, you know, the last one before, December in 2012. Be interesting to see what happens that time. But we also have something else really, really exciting to talk about. Would you like to, since we had Kathleen McGowan on last week, a lot has happened.
Yes, a lot has happened. We have combined our energies together, and a tour is being a quest, a sacred France spiritual quest with Kathleen and her husband and Catherine Brinkley. And you and I and Sierra, we're going to go to France on May 1 through 8. And I put the invitation out to, I looked at so many charts, and so many of our clients have in their charts markings about the Cathars in France and Jesus, Mary Magdalene bloodline. So I started looking and found a huge group that I thought, well, we'll just send out this email and see what happens. Well, I'm just absolutely floored by the response, because it looks like that we're probably going to have more than one trip. Looks like we're going to have like three or four trips, because we have that kind of response to the invitation.
And the really special thing, I think, because a lot of great people take or lead a spiritual quest, and you know, the whoever signs up are the ones that go. But in this case, it's a soul group, and Lavendar is actually looking at all these charts, seeing who's got the markings and which markings, and using her own knowledge and experience, putting together the energies that go together just by studying their charts. And these, you know, this is one group, and this group is over here. It's like one might be in the key of B and one might be in the key of C. So she's really taking a lot of time in assembling the groups energetically. So when we get to France, I don't know what is going to happen because we're there, but I know that something is going to happen. It will be more than just an expedition. It is actually it's a quest. We don't know the object of the quest, but we know that it is one. So I think it's just really, really cool. So we'll be updating you on that as we go. And also, Kathleen McGowan is coming back to Starseed Radio Academy next Tuesday, January 17th, and we'll be talking more about the Sacred France Starseed Quest, as well as so many things that Kathleen has to teach us and to tell us about in her experiences, and we're just really looking forward to that.
What I'd like to say about discovery of star markings is that when I discovered it and knew that I was onto something, tracking bloodlines and the ET experiments on the planet, the thing that did not occur to me is that I would be part of Discovery of Star Markings Part 2, and that it would be launched from France. It would just surprise me. And yet, when it happened, I went, of course. So it's evolving into more than I ever expected. I just put it that way.
And there is something definitely going on, because since Kathleen was on the show, I mean, with the exception of maybe one, every single chart that I have seen has the markings.
And that's
so
the other thing I'd like to say is that there's a signal. There's some, the people that find our website and people that want their star markings done, there's a silent vibration that's taken off and magnetized to their soul groups. And it's a signal, and it may take a while for the person to find that soul group, but it seems to be that's what's happening.
It's way beyond coincidence. I mean, it just can't be that every single chart you look at has the same, there's, you know, 360 degrees.
Yeah.
And every single one comes up with this one in particular.
Yeah, and I have to laugh when I think back to Linda Goodman when she was trying to get me to pick up the Mary Magdalene scrolls, you know, and I kept saying, you know, my name's not on it. It's like I'm sure this was planned even then or before then. So
right. Well, yeah, but you just didn't know what that was going to look like.
I didn't know what it was going to look like.
You know, but so you passed the Emerald Tablets on to Linda, who passed them on to Kathleen, and now it's come back around full circle. And, you know, Kathleen is now, you know, part of our group, and somehow your part in it is to bring these people together and unite them and to go and have all of those particular souls together in that location is going to have a result. And we just don't know what that is, but we know it's going to be wondrous.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why don't we hear from Sarah? Sarah, come on the line.
Hello, hello, ladies. This has just been fun sitting back listening to all the creation. I'm very, very excited about our trip, I should say plural, at this point. And, you know, having the markings of the Magdalene bloodline in my own chart, I'm just terribly excited about being there and just really looking forward to what actually comes of it all.
Yeah.
Yes, we won't know until after it happens what it is. But we just, you know?
Right.
But that's, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it, is just being open without any cherished outcome. You just go, you be wide open, and you be ready to accept the flow of the moment. And we just know that it's going to be an incredible experience for every single person. It will be life-changing and uplifting, and I think it's going to have something to do with helping to re-anchor the divine feminine energies on this planet.
That's my suspicion about it, and I'm also really looking forward to doing that with our Starseed family also, and to get to know them a little bit more and to be able to be on this trip with them. So, but I agree, Ariel, I really believe it's going to have this, we're going to help to facilitate a grounding or re-implementation of that divine feminine energy here on the planet. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Very excited.
One of the things that I hope happens, I've got a friend named Jim Graypack, and I hope that he's listening tonight because he's a movie producer, and I think we need to film what's going to happen. So, Jim, if you're listening, I sure hope that you go with us on this trip.
That's so funny. I was going to actually bring that up to you, Lavendar, but it doesn't surprise me that we're on the same page with that. I think it's pretty important to get it filmed.
Right.
So we'll just put a call out to our Starseed community, you know, anyone out there that has experience in filming and would like to and can go on this trip with us. Let's have a conversation, and you know, so come on forward and contact us about that.
Right. Also, I have this wonderful friend that I talk to every Sunday from England, T. Roy Dutton, who is a scientist who has been talking with me for over a year, and he's has a book out, and he's been tracking when the Pleiadians or other ships come into the planet and how they leave, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to take a side trip over to visit with him. So I'm hoping that will happen, because I have a feeling that when he and I sit down, there's going to be another discovery. Another discovery. Don't know what it is, but I just feel it in my bones.
Well, that would be exciting to be able to see more of the countryside, you know, so I'm up for the trip.
Yeah, good. So do we have any people on the switchboard?
Oh, yes, we do. We have a lot of people on the switchboard. And I think are we ready now to take some questions and comments?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we are going to go first to our friend Ralph. Hello, Ralph. You're on the air.
Hello, ladies. How are you? I hope you're having a great night. It's a great show.
Well, thank you.
Ed, we couldn't talk to John, but I look forward to looking into his books, into his writings. But he said something pretty interesting about the Heaven's Gate people, and I kind of had researched that event on several different levels, and I kind of understand that they really maybe didn't kind of commit suicide. It was assisted, if anything, but I think the government had a hand in that. But that's conspiracy theory, I guess. But my question is actually to Lavendar, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Lavendar, but I was just wondering if the information in the Vault of Knowledge would be complete before December 21st this year, the revelation of the information in there.
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
He wants to know how much more you're bringing out of the vault, and if you're going to bring out your whole treasure trove before December 2012. And I think I can answer that, Ralph, by saying no.
Yeah, that's
because there is information there that has to be released according to circumstances and levels of evolution, and there is a huge chunk of Lavendar's experiences that that people just aren't ready for, and we have to be responsible with that. So you just have to stay tuned.
I've been waiting with bated breath since the crack between the worlds, and just very awesome information that comes out of there. So I was just wondering if there was some type of timed release before December 21st.
There'll be a couple of things that come out that'll be timely.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's primarily all I had to ask tonight. Thank you very much. Great show, and love to all of you.
Yeah, thank you, Ralph.
Thanks so much, Ralph. Bye-bye. Okay. We are going to go next to Apollo. Hello, Apollo. You are on the air.
Hello, Ariel.
Hello.
Hey, and Lavendar, it's Jeremy. I feel like I'm like Ralph. I'm becoming like one of the top three callers in, always with something. But I have a question for Lavendar. You know, one, I came a little late, but I called Lavendar on the hotline, and I'm so excited to have heard the bits and pieces of this week's show, because I was asking her about hermeticism, because I have long-time alchemy and magic in my chart. So thank you, ladies. It seems to be resonating and synchronizing. I have a question about a major feminine energy, Isis. I feel like I've been activated to a certain path of Isis, and I know it has to do with some of the Marys. I just am interested in what either of you ladies have on some of the history of this this goddess, the forms, the cosmic mother, and how it relates to certain starseed bloodlines.
I don't really have a lot of information about Isis. I went to Egypt. I experienced some of the Isis frequency over there. And it's not something that I've incorporated into my work. It's of course, very intense in Egypt and the people that go there. I'm sorry, Jeremy. I don't really have a whole lot to say about that.
It's all right. I know, because there's a number of other folks who resonate as a sort of very big, almost like going above the galactics into sort of the universal level, which is of course huge, but I don't think we always really have time, or it's not necessarily our focus. But I just wondered if there was anything connected to Athena and her projects. People usually just connect it with the Marys, which is why I really asked the question, because some folks connect Jesus' mother with an incarnation of Isis. So that was sort of my question.
Well, see, all the bloodlines and all the experiments on the planet, they dovetail back into each other. And all the goddess figures throughout history all have a major theme, and that is the creation of the is. Okay?
Just
stay with the up spiral of bringing in new information with new bloodlines, with new experiments on the planet. And they're kind of a beacon that just stays lit all the time.
That resonates. That resonates as an answer to me. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. And thank you, Ariel. Thank you, everyone, so much. You're a wonderful family, and I give many thanks to you.
Thank you for calling.
And to you as well. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good night. Bye.
Okay. See, we have one more caller with a question. This is Jewel. You are on the air. Hello.
Hi, everybody. I kind of missed that part where when you asked him about the Mayans disappearing and reappearing.
Well,
hello?
He said that didn't happen. He said that was just a mess.
Oh, okay. Now I have another thing. as you were talking about Kathleen McGowan, when I was listening to her, I mean, I don't even know which part of the speech, but my whole body just, you know, vibrated, and I joined the group, and I felt strongly about you know, getting my readings done now. And before that, I didn't really, you know, I was kind of feeling it, but I felt it a lot, you know, when that happened, it still kind of freaks me out a little bit, because I've had it happen before and since then, but it was like a total body experience, if that makes any sense. And so I just wanted to say that. And so did you have to have your readings done before now, or just now in between the time you are going to go, or you're too full to take any more people? Is that
well? It looks like we're going to have, you know, several trips, and probably the first one is probably going to be full already. But I'd like to say to you, thank you so much for that comment about what happened to your body and your experience. I got probably 30, 40 emails that said the same thing. Same thing. Identical. Saying, I started listening, something started happening to my body, I started shaking. Some people got cold, some people got really hot and had to jerk their clothes off. People were experiencing really high vibrational frequency. Some people heard sounds in their ears. Others just had to go lay down and then couldn't move. I mean, just goes on and on and on about what happened when they were listening to the show or after they were listening to the show. And even the ones that listened on the archives, same thing. So thank you so much for verbalizing that on our show, because I hadn't really brought that up yet about what was happening to some of the people that listened to the show with Kathleen McGowan.
Well, you're welcome. And I'd like to ask you another question, if you can answer it. Were those people also have the markings of the, what are you calling it, Mary Magdalene markings?
They had the star markings that either were Atlantis, France, Mary Magdalene during the Crusades, you know, one or all the above. These were clients of mine that had already had their charts done and were responding to me, telling me, you know, how they were activated by just listening to the show.
Okay. Cool. Thank you so much for telling me that. Then I know that I need to get my things done.
Okay, go on our website, and you can order a stage one, which Aria will do, or a stage two, which I will do, which I will talk to you personally and record the session, and we'll go into, you know, the depths of your chart.
Okay, so you don't have to do both stage one and stage two. You could do stage two?
You can do stage two, and I do the whole thing.
Okay. Well, now, I can't find my birth certificate, and you have to know the exact time of your birth, right?
It that gives me the full spectrum. However, if you do not have the time, then I can give you about 75% of the information of your chart.
Well, I have about the time, so I know it was about 8 o'clock in the morning. I have about the time. I just
you can probably get enough information to see if you have the star markings.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jewel. And I would add, not only for Jewel, but for anyone else, you can call the Bureau of Vital Statistics in your state and get another copy of your birth certificate, and the time may well be on there, because it really helps to have the full picture. Another thing that I want to say about that show with Kathleen, the energy was so high, and the passion that came through her voice and the activations that happened really had a profound effect on me as well. And I want to share something that came to me right after that show, and I stood up and I had such clarity about a lot of things, but there was a word that came through so loud and clear, and it has almost become like a mantra, and I realized the power just by using that word whenever possible, and the word is yes. Everything, I say it as many times a day as I can, and it really helps to move stuck energies. It helps to move things, you know, into a higher level. But just like, you know, even something so simple as like, yes, I have clean laundry. You know, anytime, any excuse that you can find to use the word yes, yes, yes.
Well, it's an
so
affirmation
powerful.
Of alignment.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. It was great. Okay. Well, we have another caller with a question. And this is Chris. Hang on a sec, Chris. Hang on. I'm pushing the button.
Okay.
All right, Chris,
all right.
You are now on the air.
Hi, this is Chris from Wyoming. And I just had a question for Lavendar. With the previous caller you mentioned, people's reactions to Kathleen's, you know, being on the show. And one of the things you talked about was hearing frequencies. And that kind of peaked for me, like all my life, you know, I've had these experiences where it's sort of like leaving 3D, kind of being slightly pulled out, and then, you know, a frequency in my head. And I've always wondered what that was. And, you know, I'm sure other people have this happen.
Well, it depends on who you are.
Uh-huh.
It could be technology at work. It could be implants. It could be your consciousness. It could be the bloodline that you're aligned with that is in the DNA pops. Sometimes it'll just pop, and you'll hear a pop in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And And it's like that particular file just got opened.
I see. Okay. So there's like, there's just many, many different possibilities. How does one figure that out? What's going on?
Sometimes you never figure it out. You just live with it, go with it, and stay true to who you are.
Okay.
It'll just, you know, it's like an onion. It'll just peel itself until it reveals what it needs to reveal to you.
Okay. All right. Someday I'll know then, maybe.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just also want to say I'm really looking forward to Kathleen being on the show. I got her first book on December, well, sometime in the middle of December, and I've read all three, and I'm going to start the expected one again.
I hope you make contact with our forest ranger over there at the Grand Teton.
I do, too. She was gone for a while, and I have sent her an email. I'm going to send her another one.
Yeah.
So
I have a feeling the two of you are going to be great friends.
I hope so. Okay. Well, I'm really enjoying your show. I'm listening to your archives, and, you know, by the time I talk to you again, I hope to have all of them under the belt, so I can catch up with
Great.
Everybody else who's been with you for years. So I really appreciate all the work that you and Ariel and Purple Sage, all these people. I really appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you, and I have you on the list, Chris.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be there. Okay, I'll get off the phone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks so much, Chris. Bye-bye. Well, I'd like to just add to what you said, Lavendar, earlier, repeat what you said earlier, is that if you can truly stay out of polarity with everyone, you go to another higher level of consciousness. And if you live your life with as much integrity as you have, then you go to another level of consciousness. And just in doing that, in being the best you can possibly be and consciously stay out of polarity, which basically means you just don't get into competition with people, things just start happening and snapping all over the place as you shed all that unnecessary stuff.
And there's no competition with alignment, ever.
You're right.
Something I'd like to bring up, our guest that we had earlier was talking about how time was speeding up. I don't think time is speeding up. I think consciousness is speeding up. And it makes it look like time is speeding up.
Really, it's just a matter of perspective then.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know that the weeks are flying by at faster and faster rates, so it seems to me, but if consciousness is speeding up and rising, then it could just be that rather than time actually changing.
There's still 24 hours in a day. Okay, that hasn't changed. But what changes is how we spend that time. And, it's like one time I was on my way to the airport and I said, oh, I just need 10 minutes. I need 10 minutes. If I can get 10 minutes, I'll make that plane. And the next thing I knew, the car had jumped. And I was 10 minutes, ahead. I'll never forget that. And it's like, and I made the plane. That kind of thing. It's like my consciousness wanted 10 minutes and it got it. Nobody said what it was going to look like.
I agree,
right.
Lavendar. That's happened to me several times where I've literally, and, you know, my friends that spend time around me just say, Sierra, do your thing. Bend time. We need to get there on time. And then all of a sudden we're there. And it is. I agree, Lavendar. It's a speeding up of consciousness. So I believe that we as beings, you know, soul beings, light body beings, can actually move through certain type of time continuums. We can go forward, we can go backwards, we can jump in time. And it's just activating that part of our consciousness or our brain to be able to do these things. But yes, that's absolutely, you know, it's sort of like you're both saying the same thing but in a different context. He's saying time's speeding up and we're saying our consciousness is speeding up, which matches that we can actually leapfrog through time. So I agree, Lavender.
Well, that's just kind of the way I've been looking at it lately.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another caller with a question for Lavendar, I believe. We are going to be talking to Harold. Hello, Harold. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Is this,
yes,
this is
I,
my Harold?
Yes, it is. your call out this week was quite profound, needless to say. But as I explained in my email to you, I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but there is a tremendous amount of hidden fear, and I'm sure I cannot be the only one, related to this trip to France. I mean, it's like the pull is so strong to come, to be there. And as you know, I've been to the area twice before, but I simply cannot make myself go to the places that I need to go to. And the emotion gets too strong. And I need to find some way to meditate about this. Do you have some suggestions for those of us who are harboring these fears to sort of ease into this a little bit better?
Wow. No, I haven't seen your email. And wow, you've caught me off guard. Well, let's see. One of the things that just kind of comes to me, if anyone's having fear about the trip, sometimes the fear comes because when you open the door and you go through, you can't ever go back to the way you were before, and it's about
right.
change.
Very
it's
much
about right. seeing something that's going to change you so profoundly that that it can strike a fear button. It can, you know,
yes.
it can
yeah.
give you a little intrepidation about, well, should I really do this? And I must say, when I think back to this past December, and I was going to be talking to Kathleen McGowan, and I looked at the ephemeris, and Mercury was retrograde. So I called Catherine Brinkley and I said, you know, I just can't talk to her until Mercury goes direct. So Mercury became direct. And I still was, you know, putting it off. And why was that? Because I knew the minute I talked to her and I opened that door, there was no turning back. So
that's
I had
exactly
a little
right.
bit of, I'm not saying it was fear, I had caution. I knew the responsibility level of opening the door. It wasn't just for me. It was about all the people standing behind me or around me, those in front of me. I knew it had to do with something huge. So, and maybe
yeah.
that's what's happening with you. I don't
Very
know. I just
so,
wanted
I
to
believe.
Share with
yeah.
you how long it took me to pick up the phone to call her.
Well, and I think there were some others who expressed during the program last week some physical uncomfort. I mean, I had a serious major physical uncomfort during a portion of the show that really made it difficult for me to even just sit and listen. But, you know, through breathing exercises, you can work through some of these things. But I just was wondering if you, and maybe if you would think about that, I would certainly appreciate it, and I'm sure others would as well, to maybe give us some suggestions of thoughts, ideas, meditative type of things that we might do to help make the decision to come and to
okay,
be able
I'll
actually
be calling
do the
you
trip.
Jerry this in the next 2 or 3 days, okay?
Okay.
I will.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate
okay,
it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for calling, Harold. And, you know, I think that was a really, really helpful question and a very, very, very trusting of Harold to open up like that. I haven't seen his chart, Lavendar. I think you have. Do you think that people who have obviously the karmic records in that area, and there are some really terrible things that happened that probably carry a lot of grief, and could the fear be having to deal with the grief again in this lifetime? Because, I mean, I know even just when I was reading the book, The Expected One, I mean, I wept. I just wept, but it was a clearing. But I don't know. Do you think that might have something to do with it?
Well, it could, and I know his chart very well, and of course he is so connected to that whole area, the Cathars, and you know he's knee deep in this story. So Harold, we got to get you over this real quick, honey. Go on this trip.
It could be a very liberating experience.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes when you go for ultimate freedom, you will have these stumbling blocks that will keep you from getting it, or try to talk you out of it, or, you know, send you a rabbit shaking. So you have to decide how much courage you're going to have, and you just buckle up, buttercup, and you just go for it. You know, when you think of all the lifetimes we've had, we've all experienced everything that there is probably to experience. We've been men, we've been women, we've had children, we've gone to war, we've killed people, we've been raped, we've been lied to, we've played trickster. I mean, you name the scenario, we've played it. So it's like, so what? We've done it all. Now we have to decide in a wise way how we want to play our energy now, because now it's what we have.
That's right. Past doesn't really have any hold on you. It's only the positive things that you bring forward.
Yeah.
That you need to be concerned with.
Right. I actually do believe that there'll be a lot of people on this trip when they go, they may experience something that you know, takes them to the depths of hell right there on the spot. But on the other hand, within seconds, I see it being gone too. It's like, you know, get it, got it, good, gone. I
uh-huh.
think that we'll be in that kind of company. I think we'll be in that kind of resonant field to where you won't have to go and work it out and go to your inner child and ask for permission. I don't think anything like that's going to happen. I think that the recognition of what it is will be clear, and we have enough very advanced people on this trip that will be able to take care of it in 5 seconds, and it'll be gone. That's just my head.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of sensing that. I'm sure that people who are part of this soul group have been carrying wounds down through the ages of time, and I think that this trip may well rip off the Band-Aid and some of the hairs around the wound, but ultimately there will be healing.
Well,
so,
a lot of the ones that have the Cathar records, one of the things that was promised, even upon their death, when they all stood in a circle holding hands, they all pledged their souls to come back together, to come back to the spot, and to come back to an incarnation that was going to tell the truth about what happened. So that soul promise has been resonating for a very, very, very long time. And so the moment of actually getting on the airplane and going and walking on the land and meeting others that you made a pact with, that's got to be monumental.
And very liberating.
And very liberating. and probably a little scary to some.
Right. Well, it's okay to be scared. It's what you do next.
Yeah.
You know, you can. Bravery is not about not having any fear. Bravery is about going ahead even with it. You know, and in that, it gets conquered.
Right.
So, well, we have one more caller with a comment.
Okay.
And it is none other than Joseph. Hello, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hello, ladies.
Hi.
What a joy to speak to you all. Lavender, I hope you got my email, and I hope you understand my response.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Well, when you do, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
My experience from hearing Kathleen was incredible liberation, but then that connection you know about, too, about the court of Queen Elizabeth I and all of those people. I'm so excited that I had a chance to speak to her, and I want to speak to you further, but I want to do it in private, so I will give you a call, Lavendar.
Okay.
And discuss it with you. What an incredible opportunity for those who are able to go, who make the choice to go.
Can you give Harold some advice?
Can I give Harold some advice? Harold, if you're having that kind of reaction, Harold, you're so deeply connected with this, that please don't back away from it. I mean, what Ariel just said, I mean, bravery is not doing it, it's going through it, whatever it is. I mean, I have memories of that whole period that were so brought to light by those books of Kathleen's. I can't wait to see what she writes next, because so far I've been involved in every one of them, and I understand and I know this is the time for us to remember. We've been so dismembered, and it's time to remember who we are, why we're here, and where it is we're going, and what we're here to do. And, Harold, you must be part of that. So gird up your loins, boy, and just go. Oh, God.
Well said. Well said.
You all have opened so many doors. I mean, every one of us are probably just shaking in our boots, but I'm shaking with joy. And I know I can imagine some people are terrified at the thought of confronting this, but it's who you are. This is so exciting. It really is. You said just something a minute ago, Ariel, that just set up fireworks in me. There is no competition, but the word compete originally meant, if you go to the Oxford English Dictionary and look at the original meaning, it means to compete, means to make a journey with. And a competitor is a person with whom you choose to make a sacred journey. That's what a competere. Petere means to search, com means with, to search with. That's one of the things I was doing at the time of Queen Elizabeth. We were creating the English language, which has gotten a bit perverted, but that's okay. The meanings are still there.
Right.
So I wasn't going to call tonight. I just walked in the door from Albuquerque from yet one more appointment at the VA. And, they're blown away at how well my eyes are doing. I mean, the next thing is to remove the cataracts, and the doctor says you'll have 20/20 vision, and I'm saying I can deal with it. Just bring it on. Well, folks, you're all being confronted with the opportunity to have 20/20 vision. Do it.
Yeah. I'm so happy for you, Joseph.
Thank you. Thank you. I am too. It's going to make your life a lot less complicated. Let's put it that way.
And I'll call you sometime this week, Joseph. Just
wonderful.
Be looking for my call.
I will do that, and much love to each and every one of you. You are such a blessing to my life.
And you to us.
Thank you. Bye for
thank
now.
Thank you so much. Thank you
You're
so much,
welcome.
Joseph. We love you.
Thank you, Ariel. I love you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. Let me just take one more look down the switchboard here and make sure that we haven't missed anyone. No, everyone has had a chance to come on and speak. So all I would like to say in conclusion is you got to join us next week when Kathleen McGowan returns. And it's just going to be an electric show. And if you did not hear her last week, I would recommend listen to last week's show before you listen to next week's show so that it has some continuity for you. And I'm really, really looking forward to the planning and coming together of this Starseed quest to Sacred France.
Also, Catherine Brinkley will be here next week, too, with Kathleen.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I know she wanted to be here last week but was totally unable to. So Catherine Brinkley, one of the most loving light spirits I have ever encountered, we'd just be thrilled to have both of them on at the same time.
Well, she's already been to France with Kathleen, and she'll talk about her experiences there.
Oh, excellent, excellent. That'll be great. So I would like to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard for us this evening, and Sierra, Lavendar, and all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with Kathleen McGowan, and as I said, if you didn't hear her last week, please listen to that show in the archives before next week. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in, and we send you all love and the Emerald Ray. Good night.
Good night. You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.